everybody. Welcome to Master of the Universe Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher J. Motherfucker to the Max. And alongside my broadcast colleague, as always, Joey Cage and the Man Beast Gabe, a.k.a. G Money. What it do?
What it do, man? What are we doing today?
We would be doing none other than the sequel, Conjuring 2, starring Patrick Wilson.
Vera Farmiga. I can't believe I remembered her name off the top of my head. I wasn't looking at shit, but yeah. I think it was released in 2013.
It was 16.
Yep. Son of a bitch. All right, so that's how you know. That's how you know I'm honest, right? But anyway, so before we get started, I always like to ask Gabe, and you know, the guy keeps up with all the fucking horror shit, sending me stuff, and I'm like, damn, I would have never known. I would have found out like 3 months after everyone was talking about it and it came out live or whatever's going on. Any horror movie news or anything going on in the horror world, man, for all the people that keep up with that shit?
Oh, man, I'm pretty sure you all saw that I sent you all last time, was that they're coming out with a Quiet Place Part 3, so that's working. That's coming out soon, it's in the works anyways.
Didn't Part 2 just come out or something?
Yeah, Part 2 did just come out.
Yeah.
And this last weekend.
2018.
What's that?
I was going to say, wasn't part one like early 2018?
Yeah, it was.
I haven't even seen that one. I've always heard of it, but I haven't seen it, so I guess that's not what we're going to be doing. Is it worth watching, dude, or what?
Hey, it's actually pretty cool. You know, the wife actually had her reserves about trying to watch it, only because, you know, the name of the movie is Quiet Place, so you think like, oh, I'm going to sit there and watch a silent movie. For the most part, it's, you know, there's a little bit of sound, but any type of sound that's actually made in that damn movie, you're actually more fearful for the people that you're following in that movie, because pretty much any sound equals to death in that movie. So, it's pretty intense.
Sounds like my house when I was living with the old wife. You know what I'm saying. Any sound meant bad news, dude. So yeah. So James Wan comes back to direct. I don't know too many sequels that he's going to go ahead and direct. We got part 3 next week. Comes out tomorrow, technically, on the 4th, right, Friday. So I'm going to be watching that with the old CJ eating Domino's probably or something like that. But
some shiznit like that.
Yeah, but I don't think James Wan's directing that one. Do y'all have any history with watching part 2 before I get into my chicken shit story? You Chris, you didn't write. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
No, I ain't got no history with that.
Oh, okay, cool, man. All right, Gabe, go ahead, dude.
Yeah, same thing here. I don't really have just how I went to the movies and just saw it. You know, I mean, I really don't have any history with this movie.
Did you went? Well, I mean, yeah, when you saw it, did you like it back then or anything like that or?
Oh, well, yeah, definitely. I enjoyed pretty much the story with this one in comparison to part one. The part one had like more of a darker kind of tone to it. Mm-hmm. And this one, even though it had like its little dark spots, I think it was a little more enjoyable just the way the story went.
Yeah.
It just kind of opened some things up for that whole Conjuring universe. So I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I thought I was telling myself before, like I said, I always talk to myself what I'm going to talk about with these reviews. And I was like, I think I like this one more than part two, even though part one's darker. Exactly what you said. You know, it's probably has a little bit more freaky parts or whatever. But this is the one that it just kept like the pace just felt really good, and I liked all the gimmicks that they threw in there with like the crooked man and shit like that, and then the nun. I liked Annabelle in the first one, but that was like the highlight for me. That was the main thing about the first one. But when I first saw this in theater, like I'm a big paranormal fan, so anything paranormal, like when Insidious came out, I was like already like freaking out. You know, I was like hell yeah. And then The Conjuring came out, and I was like they're making a sequel to The Conjuring. You know, I was like wow, you know, badass. And I remember going to the theater, like it was like during the day, and I had a couple of drinks. And I came home midday, and I was getting ready to lay down just for a little bit. And I was by myself, and I was like, you know, I had this long, not super long hallway, but it was like a long enough hallway to kind of make me remember just coming out of the theaters, remembering when the nun was in that fucking hallway, and I was like, oh shit. So when I got home, I was like, okay, come over here, Brownie, get your ass over here, Jabroni, you know. So that movie kind of freaked me out just a little bit, but Chris, how did you enjoy it this time around, dude?
Dude, this is exactly the kind of scare I like. This is exactly the kind of shit, like, fuck, dude, the nun is the main fucking thing. That nun is just fucking frightening. And I mean, even though I know our parents probably went through worse nuns in Catholic school, but still, like, gosh damn, dude, that thing just looks. And I mean, old school nun outfits are already kind of grim because they're mostly black with a little bit of white trim. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, you think of nuns and you think of these, you have the imagery of these, of course, it's not like this now, but we're growing up, you know, the nuns, you have this imagery of these old ladies with these grim faces and stuff like that, and they have this authority over you because you're a little kid. So now you're taking the worst things you used to think about nuns as a kid, and then you're adding in a paranormal, frightening, murderous element. It's fucking just, ugh.
Yeah,
massively done.
I was always afraid of nuns. I don't know who told me about it. It might have been like a cousin or something. They, you know, like when you hear different stories, and like for whatever reason, whenever I was in a hospital, I would always kind of freak out, you know, because like I said, I guess like one of my cousins told me there was like there was a ghost of a nun in there. So I would always kind of like freak out because, you know, hospitals are like quiet and they're huge. And if you're there at night, there's not too many people there in certain, you know, areas. So I was always kind of weary of nuns, even though I was, you know, I guess because they have like little church gimmicks there, too. But Gabe, you want to tell us like a brief synopsis about how this one rolls and we can talk about it?
Yeah, no problem. Well, pretty much, this movie is similar to part one, where it gives you an interesting, like, beginning side story and how it leads into the main story. Mm-hmm. Well, as far as this goes, it starts off with Lorraine Warren, and she's pretty much she's giving you her story about how this was, like, one of the most scariest experiences she's ever had. And it starts off with them having a seance in the beginning at the Amityville house. Now, pretty much, if you're not familiar with the Amityville house, the horror that, you know, that happened there, one of the family members ended up killing the rest of their family. And when they got taken in, you know, and they were going to have their day in court, the guy was... The family member, the one who was, he was pleading, instead of pleading insanity or anything else, he started pleading that he was possessed by, you know, by a demon, something paranormal. Well, leave it to Lorraine Warren and Ed Warren. They go ahead and end up investigating this. They go ahead and go to that house, and they end up having a seance. Mm-hmm. As the movie starts going. She's reliving that whole experience with him, you know, killing off his family members. So it's already setting off a dark tone for this whole movie. You're seeing everyone dead in their beds. She's reliving that whole experience, and she's getting freaked out. Everyone's trying to pull her out of that whole seance because she's getting too. She's getting too involved in that.
Does she see the nun? I forget, like in the very beginning of it, or we don't see her. She does, right? Okay, yeah.
Right. So as she's reliving this whole experience and they're trying to pull her out, there happens to be a young childlike ghost, you know, a paranormal, and he ends up saying, you know, follow me this way to the basement. So as you're watching this movie, you're thinking like, okay, this is going to be like a jump scare, something weird's going to happen. But this is where she actually encounters the nun. And you know, she's freaking out with back and forth with the nun, and she asks, you know, the nun, what do you want? The nun ends up pointing and off to the side, and off to the side happens to be her husband. And her husband ends up spitting out, hey, I'm sorry. All of a sudden, a big old spike ends up coming through his chest. So all of a sudden, she got freaked out, and they go ahead and they pull her out of the seance, and she was saying... Her experience was, she was saying that that's the closest to hell that she ever wants to be. Later on in the movie, they end up saying that she actually locked her, after that whole experience, she locked herself in the room for 7 days. Well, after that whole, you kind of get the feel like that might be like a premonition, some kind of idea or, you know, foreshadowing like for the future. Well, anyways, later on it jumps into the whole London house. It jumps into London, and that's where it has the Hodgson family. And now this is like a group of five, a family of five. It's a single mother with four other kids. And, you know, you're already seeing the struggles with this family. They get into it. They go ahead and they start explaining, like, oh, you know, we're barely making ends meet. You know, the dad is, he's not even dead. He just happened to leave the family. And so these kids are kind of going through their own kind of personal issues. Anyways, to add on top of that, they happen to have a ghost that actually ends up tormenting them. First off, it starts off with like small little things.
Yeah.
And then it leads up to something bigger where then all of a sudden it's tormenting the whole family. So what does the family do? They go ahead and call the police. That was their first response, was like, I don't know what to do. The mom's like, I'm just going to call the police. Yeah. They come and investigate the whole thing. They start experiencing the whole paranormal too. And sure enough, you know, the cops are like, look, we'll write a report about it, but there's nothing we can do. We don't know how to handle something like this. If it was a criminal, a break-in or something, we'll take care of it, but we don't know how to handle this. But tell you what, I have a friend or whatever, you know, they happen to be paranormal investigators. They'll go ahead and take a look into it for you. So later on, after a while, this whole thing, like other little things start happening, and it tends to blow up. And now all of a sudden the media's got a hold of this. And so now they start, the media's like at their front door, and a lot of people are saying that this is a hoax. You know, they're doing it for publicity. They're already in a bad situation. They're making ends meet. You know, they're a family of five. You know, they just want the attention. They want some kind of money. Who knows what? Anyways, the paranormal investigators can't seem to find anything, so they end up calling for backup. They end up getting some help. Yeah. So that's where the Warrens come in. The Warrens end up saying, look, we want you to come down over here. We want you to investigate, you know, and if it's true, you know, if everything is happening the way they're saying it is, it'll go up the food chain and we'll go ahead and get like an exorcism or who knows, whatever they're going to do. And if it's a hoax, well, then it's a hoax and you just kind of go back home and, you know, but we just want your expertise on this. So they're like, oh, okay, well, we don't turn down help, you know, to help out a family. So what do? They go ahead and go on over there. And they're asking all kinds of questions. They're investigating. They're kind of looking around. They're kind of seeing what's going on. So then Ed Warren ends up investigating and starts asking about the father, you know, why he's not involved. Well, he just happened to find another woman and ended up having kids with her from around the block or down the street. So
that fucking scumbag.
Yeah, really. That's what I was thinking. I was like, wow. And on top of that, too, you know, he took all the... They said, yeah, we don't even have music anymore.
The Elvis records or something, right? Or some bull. I don't know. I think Patrick Wilson just likes Elvis, but I know yeah. They took all the music, yeah.
And remember the story on the Elvis records? Like, the moms, all like the kids used to like listening to that until the husband left. Didn't she say, like, he left to go bang the woman down the street and they had twins?
Yeah, they had twins. I was like, man, it just kind of... But it was funny, though, because... She ends up saying, yeah, all the music is gone. And Ed Warren ends up replying, don't worry. Things will start looking up. Like, no, I'm serious. Like, he literally took all the music. All the vinyl records. It's all gone. He's like, oh, sorry about that. Yeah.
Thank you.
at this point, you know, Ed and Lorraine Warren are already at the house. They're already investigating. They're asking questions. Now, as far as we understand, Lorraine Warren ends up, she has this, this kind of ability to where she can feel things in the air. She can feel like an ominous presence, you know, anything dark or anything that's, you know, kind of floating in the air. She can kind of get that vibe. But the moment she came, along with Ed Warren, she ends up saying, like, you know, I don't sense anything. I don't feel anything. And he's like, nothing, nothing at all. No, that I don't get anything at all. Which is really weird, but it plays out for the bigger story ahead. Mm-hmm. So as it goes on, so they're going back and forth, and now all of a sudden this haunting, even though all throughout this movie we're starting to see all kinds of weird things happen, floating things and all kinds of stuff. We're not seeing anything that really the Warrens aren't seeing anything that's concrete, because they need proof. They need evidence, just like they showed in the first one. They needed to get, like, cameras and all kinds of stuff happening. But the thing is that Lorraine Warren is confused about the whole ordeal. She believes that there is something there, but she just can't sense it, and she doesn't understand why. Ed Warren is starting to have his kind of reserves. Now he's kind of starting to feel like, you know, maybe this really is like a publicity stunt. Well, after a while, the little girl, Janet, she's actually the one that's, I think she's second oldest out of the four kids, and she's the one that's being targeted the most. She actually ends up getting possessed. Well, she ends up getting possessed earlier in the movie before the Warrens got there, and she starts showing signs like, you know, there's ghosts and paranormal activity going on. Anyways, they go later on in the movie when the Warrens are there and they're investigating. They ended up telling Ed Warren, saying like, you know, Janet, the ghost can actually speak through her. Really? Well, I want to talk to Bill Wilkins, mm-hmm. which is, that's the paranormal that's harassing this family. You know, I want to talk to him. Well, the little girl ends up saying, he says he'll talk to you, but only if you have your backs turned towards me. What? Why do our backs need to be turned towards you? I don't know. That's the only way he said he'll go ahead and talk to you. So already at this point, he's already kind of having some reserves. He thinks it's kind of funky, because why would you need to turn your back to talk in a different voice? You know, if you're possessed, you're possessed. Mm-hmm. So it's already making it seem like a hoax. Anyways, Bill Wilkins, and they all turn their backs, and he's asking questions. And Bill Wilkins is basically saying, this is my house. I need you all to get the hell out of my house. You know, I belong here. You all people don't. So Ed Warren's like, look, I don't know what you're saying, but this house isn't yours. Do you even know how you died? Yeah, I died. I died in the corner of in my chair. And I died of a brain hemorrhage. And, you know, I died on that chair. But this is my house. All of a sudden, he starts speaking in gibberish. And they're all like, come on, man. Wouldn't you rather move on to the afterlife? What are you still doing here? I don't believe in all of that. Oh, you don't believe any of that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, at this point, he's already, like, threatening him, but he doesn't say much. They all turn right back around. And, you know, apparently Bill Wilkins has already, you know, fled the scene. He's gone. So, as the story progresses, the Warrens, they end up doing something else. They have some cameras hidden around the house. They end up finding... seeing the little girl, Janet, the one who was possessed, they see her in the kitchen wrecking everything in that kitchen, like tearing it apart, just literally just going insane, just breaking stuff, throwing things, just pissed off. Well, they came back and she's all like, hey, look, I was possessed. You know, it was the ghost. Things were floating around. And they're like, really? Oh, it was the ghost? Yeah, it was the ghost, I swear. They end up looking at the video and they find out that it was her and it's not the ghost. Nothing was floating around. She just kind of standing there, and then she just kind of goes crazy and just starts wrecking shit. So they take it as, okay, this is a hoax. time to go home, we're done. So Lorraine's just like, you know, I don't feel comfortable about this. There's just something that's not right. So Ed Warren's like, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way, but you weren't feeling nothing. There was no ominous presence, and we clearly have video. That's the only clear, concrete evidence that we have, and that's the girl just wrecking stuff. So clearly, I don't know, they're going through daddy issues. They're who knows what, but they're having some, maybe this is some type of hoax. All of a sudden, he gets like a... He starts questioning himself, and he starts thinking about Bill Wilkins, about the gibberish. So he ends up busting out. He busts out like a little tape recorder. He ends up listening to it. He starts playing all of that gibberish that was recorded throughout this movie, and or whatever they did catch, and they played it backwards. All of a sudden, it ends up in actual words.
Help.
And basically, yeah. It says, help me.
She won't let me leave. Something like that, right?
Yeah. It won't let me go. Yeah. Help me. Let me go. And, like, he's just saying things like that. And you find out that there's something else involved. Well, the whole point, they were just supposed to investigate. They weren't supposed to get involved because several years ago, again, this whole Amityville house experience, she felt like she had a premonition that, or foreshadowing that he might die if he, Ed Warren might die if he were to get involved. But since now they're getting more involved, she wanted to, they end up getting back to the house because now they have the idea that there is a ghost, there is something going on. But she ends up telling him and warning him, saying, hey, you need to stay back in case, you know, things get too dangerous, too serious. And he's all, yeah, yeah, don't worry, we need to save that family. We gotta help them out first. By that time, while they're on the way back, the ghost ends up getting extremely hostile, and he starts harassing the family. He's harassing the little girl. He's harassing everybody. Anyways, he possesses the little girl, and she's getting ready to go ahead and fly out a window. She's ready to kill herself. All of a sudden, who saves the day at the last minute? Ed Warren. Apparently, he ignored He ignored his wife, his wife's saying like, "Oh, I'll go ahead. If you can please just stay back, because I think things are going to get too dangerous." He completely ignored that because he put himself in front of the kids. Because you know, being the good guy he is, he's going to save the kids. So he goes ahead and he goes after the little girl and he saves her. Right at the last minute, she's hanging out the window. He's hanging by a curtain. He's getting ready. You know, all of a sudden, things are really getting really demonic. All of a sudden, guess who pops out? It's the freaking nun. The nun, mm-hmm. who's popped out a couple of times throughout this film, ends up coming out. And so he's freaking out. The nun's all like, oh, yeah, you know, this is exactly what I wanted. You're going to die. At that moment, you know, there's a lightning strike. It ends up hitting a tree. It hits the tree in just the right way where it makes a big spike. So now you're starting to see that foreshadowing happen from the beginning up to now. So now you're like, oh, man, he's hanging by a thread. The curtain's starting to tear. The little girl's like, help me. You know, she's all upset. You know, it's life or death. Guess who pops in? Who saves the day? Lorraine Warren. Now, earlier in the beginning of this movie, Lorraine ends up having some nightmares about this nun. She starts, she kind of fell asleep, I guess, in a way, with a Bible in her hand. And she ended up, when she was having her nightmare with the nun, she ended up writing down, you know, some gibberish and stuff, like, all in her Bible. Anyways, later on, as she popped in to go ahead and save the day, she realized all that kind of, all those little gibberish and stuff that she was writing in her Bible was a name. And the name was Valak. Well, who is that name? That's the nun. The nun's name is Valak. Now, as it goes, like, with exorcism or any other one, like The Exorcist or any other exorcism movies that you've probably seen, they always say, you know, if the demon possesses a person, you need to give the name. Because given the if you can say the name of that demon, you have dominion over that demon and you can vanquish them and just get rid of them. You know, maybe a couple of prayers here and there will probably help out, but in this case...
Hulk Hogan walks into the room with you and shit.
Yeah, and well, she's all badass, and she goes ahead and ends up yelling out the name, easily defeats the demon. The demon goes ahead and flies back into the wall and kind of turns into like a black sludge and just kind of melts into the wall. All of a sudden, she goes ahead, they pull out Ed Warren and the little girl, Janet. They save the day. All of a sudden, here comes the cops, here comes the ambulance, everyone's, you know, in the safety, and it kind of ends off on a more heartful note. Everyone's all kind of, you know, they're all thankful that they have each other, they're all, you know, everyone's kind of happy that they're all alive, and then as the credits start rolling in, then you end up seeing the credits, the actual real life people that this actually happened to in comparison to the actors and the actresses, you know, side by side. You get to see this as the credits roll on through, and well, I think that was a pretty nice you get to see the differences and the comparisons in them. There is little tidbits I left throughout the movie that I left out, but nothing that really makes a huge significance for the movie other than jump scares and more background for these characters, but we can turn into all of that
though. on the ending, just I want to say I like the part of Ed Warren giving the cross to Janet and saying there, you know, look, like it's kind of the old paying it forward, the chain of love, call it what you will, but,
you know. No, definitely. Yeah, that was pretty neat, too. Yeah, like I said, it's more of a heartful note, but it makes you feel like, you know, even after all that issues and problems that they had and all the tragedy and the dark tones in this movie, for them to, like, passing on the cross, like what you were saying, it gives a horrible... It makes you feel like everything's going to be all right, and it's a little more meaningful from an adult to a child just having that kind of experience. Like, just kind of letting them know, like, you know, there's evil shit out there, but don't worry. There's always people out there to kind of be by your side, back you up, or kind of help you out. And then, that's what I said. It's a heartful note, but man, it is pleasant. It's nice to hear, see all that too, especially in this type of movie, though.
Yeah, this one the story for this one was you know, supposedly, of course, like it was like a claim from something that happened in like the 70s that was called like the Enfield Poltergeist. And you know, I had looked into it way back when, like to see what was going on. And basically, there was like a lot of course. Skeptics, because this happened like a few years after The Exorcist was the thing, and now it's like this family's claiming all these kinds of things. So that's where the movie's kind of the ideas from a British family or whatever, or from a London. But yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. I liked how they did a lot of the shit from like a lot of the stuff from that story with the girl like talking to like the media and shit like that, that all really happened. But of course, like if you could actually see that shit on YouTube, it's like pretty funny all like how ridiculously dumb it looks compared to the actual movie that they did really well. You know how they did the, this is my house and all that crap with the voice and shit. But yeah, from beginning to end, a lot of good shit happens. Like I love that beginning, that Amityville thing. Like again, being like, knowing about the Amityville and all that stuff, like when I saw the little boy, like there's a picture that's claimed to be real, and it looks for me, it looks legit. I'm sure Chris can see it and freak out. Just put little boy Amityville house, and you'll see like this little kid like peeking through the stairs or through the door. It's like the same thing from the movie, so I knew it right away. I was like, oh, it has to be the Amityville, because basically that they were saying that, you know, of course, after all that shit had happened, they went to go look for it, and they were just, like, taking pictures, and, like, that was one of the pictures that they saw, and, like, you know, can't be explained or whatever.
Boom, and, yeah, he's got the fucking lit-up eyes and shit, the Raiden eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Raiden eyes. So that whole intro kind of, like, it set the tone for the movie, and I was, like, freaking out. I was like, oh, shit, like, you know, this little boy's, you know, anytime you have a little kid, and that's James Wan's thing, is, like, he always has, like, a little boy running around. What, is he running in this film, or is he just walking? He's like standing and pointing right in this one. He's pointing towards the Budweiser cabinet and shit.
Oh, but, my Lord. And I got to say, the Bill Wilkins, mm-hmm. That voice was great, don't get me wrong, and it was well done, especially seeing that voice come out of a little girl looking all scary and shit. But then again, I mean, you watch a documentary about, you know, a British band from the 70s, and they sound like all that anyway.
I was like, the whole, I really enjoyed this one, especially like the family, and I thought it was hilarious, you know, because, you know, of course Gabe gave us the whole kind of rundown, so it's cool to like just jump around. But there's like you said, it's a family of what, five, but one of the brothers, like Billy, like he's the one that stands out. But Johnny, he comes out of nowhere. What was that?
Yeah, Johnny, he's the asshole little brother. Like, he snitches on the sister for smoking all this stuff, and he decides to be brave with him. But Billy, I like Billy.
Billy!
He's like, Mommy, I want some biscuits. And for the American audience, you got to understand, biscuits in Britain is not biscuits here. In Britain, biscuits is cookies.
I thought it was. I was like, why the fuck is this guy, why is this kid obsessed with biscuits? Is his name Chris or what?
Yep.
It's like, nothing's wrong with biscuits. Chris is like, I'll take the Frontier Burger and I'll order a biscuits and gravy. And he's like winking at Rose. What's it called? Yeah, I was like laughing because I'm like watching the film, right? And like I watched it like I watched half of it one day, half of it the next, and I watched it again, kind of the same thing. And like there's little things that like I do that because you start noticing things like in different watches. And I was laughing towards the end where everyone leaves like the house and it's just like the family, and Johnny goes, oh, you know, they're outside and Johnny goes to the kitchen. I'm like, fucking Johnny comes back out of nowhere. Like it seemed like he wasn't even in the film, and he's like, he's gonna be the brave one to go check on the kitchen. And I was just like, you know, or whatever's going on in the kitchen, because some shit was flying around before Janet was, you know, just tossing crap. But I was like, what the fuck, this like, it just seemed like really out of place, because The Conjuring 1, they had way too many kids, you know, like they weren't even doing anything. This one, I thought it was way better, and you know, with the exception of Johnny, but like Billy, he had his little Papa Billy, he had his little fucking thing going on with the crooked man.
He had a stutter.
Yeah, and he had the biscuits too. So they gave him all the gimmicks, dude.
The crooked man thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the crooked man was badass.
He was on that tent with the little thing, the music box with the crooked man walking around.
He wants the crooked da, 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 da. Yeah.
By the end of the movie, you know how like the Warrens like to take back some kind of possessed, you know, item. They end up bringing back the little carousel that I guess that's what brings forth that whole crooked man deal.
Oh, they took that back at the. I didn't catch that. No, yeah, shit.
That's why that Warren family has that museum. Like, and I think they used to charge people to go in and see all the different exorcisms they participated in. They would take some kind of paraphernalia from that house and put it in that little home museum.
Yeah, they do that, and I think it's in the first one they show. Right, Gabe. Yeah, because they show they do the Annabelle gimmick, and yeah, they show all these things. They're like, nothing's a toy in here, even the toy monkey, and he starts winking at Chris. But the main star, we have two stars. We got Peggy Frances O'Connor, the mother. She's I recognized her right away, not only because she looks exactly like the mom in the prior film, and also Barbara Hershey in Insidious. They all have the same kind of look. But
Sally Field.
I don't know who Sally Field is. I just don't remember how she looks. But that's the chick from, y'all seen Bedazzled with Ben Frazier, that's his name, right? Brendan Fraser. Fucking name.
Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, Bedazzled. Yeah. That she's like the love interest in that one, the one that he's after the whole time. So I recognized her because I was like, why is Brendan Fraser into this chick? Because I didn't think she was like that pretty like back then. Now I see her. Now I'm like, all right, Brendan had good taste back then. You know, I'm the dumbass. I'm the dumbass. So we had her, and then we have Janet. She has like blonde hair, and like I freaked out. I was like, man, is because I noticed like everyone has like it looked like they were wearing wigs, and like I'm pretty sure like the majority of them are, because she looks like nothing like the way she does in the movie compared to like real life. But I thought she did a badass job playing the, you know, I'm sick and scared of Bill Wilkins. What did y'all think about her?
About Janet. She was all right. She wasn't that bad. Like you said, as far as all the kids, like you said in the first one, there was way too many kids, and this one, like honestly, I just kind of forgot about it. Other than the sisters were the ones that actually seemed a little more involved in comparison to to the brothers. You know, that even the one that was stuttering too.
This is my house. she wakes up in the middle of the night yelling.
Oh, yes, I know. And she's like talking to the wall, you know. She's
stay away from Billy.
Yeah, they're all, I'm gonna hurt your whole family, and Janet's all freaking out. She's all like, "Oh, leave them alone." And the other sister, like I said, she seemed to be a little more involved, and she's like, "Who are you talking to? Why? I'm trying to sleep."
Margaret,
what are you doing?
Yeah, I was. Were you of course, when I saw it in theaters, I was freaking out. But like this time around, I was kind of like laughing that like Margaret's trying to go to sleep, and then like Janet's in the middle of the thing yelling at the corner.
Yeah.
She's like, "What are you doing?" I'm trying. She's so like, fucking.
Hey, you want to know something cool? I was just reading this, kind of off topic here, but you know something about Maurice Gross?
What's up?
He served in Dunkirk in the Royal Artillery.
Okay. The actual guy from the infield, the infield thing, right?
Yeah.
The guy that did the investigation, or was he a reporter or something? He was like one of the guys that was trying to get the story of the infield poltergeist, yeah. So here you are. He's at Dunkirk, dude, son of a bitch.
Bad motherfucker. That's why the fucking spirits didn't scare him, I guess.
Dunkirk was a pretty good movie. I remember watching that one. I like a few war movies. They're pretty they're pretty entertaining for me.
Yeah, we definitely got to do some war movies in the future, dude. I really got over with Anita Gregory. She's like the skeptic. She's the one that's along with Maurice Gregory in the film. But you know that actress, man. She was like, man. I was like, I believe whatever you want me to believe.
and you know, I think one thing I think is just excellent about this. I mean, besides the fucking
Anita Gregory, right? No, go ahead.
I mean, but besides just that fucking nun. Just looks so fucking frightening. I mean, when you're a kid, when you see nuns, you get scared, even though they're like godly people, whatever. They just something about the way they look, it just scares you as a kid. You know, shit, even as adults, some people. But the thing is, like, then you have this mean face, and you know she's this spirit who's just appearing out of nowhere, and you look in the back of the mirror and you see her behind you, and shit, like, and just the effective use of seeing spirits like that in reflections, like in mirrors, in TV screens when the TV's off, etc. They effectively use that tool as kind of a get your fear juices up. And then also the use of like the narrowness of the staircase, which, I mean, they didn't make the staircase like that just to make the movie scarier. Like, that's the way those houses are. Those are called council houses. They're basically like Section 8 housing, but in Britain.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, but just the effective use of emphasizing that narrowness of the staircase, the hallways. You know, nowadays it doesn't matter if you leave the lights on at night because everything's LED, but back then, you know, and especially a poor mom, like single mom like this, you can't go to sleep with the lights on even if you're scared of ghosts, man. Fuck. And just all those things, all that imagery, all those things you can identify with having been a kid in the 80s, 90s, whatever, it just really effectively gets in your head.
Shit, that fucking actress that played the nun, she's fucking scary without makeup. Have you seen her? I've seen her for years, and I was just like, God dang, no wonder the nun looks crazy. She has, like, really strong facial features, you know, so it's like...
Really strong facial features.
Yeah, you're like, God dang, she didn't need too much makeup. Yeah, damn, I'll tell you.
That's what I've seen.
Couple of beers, you know, she'll be looking all right, you know.
Couple of beers, she'll be in Anita Gregory, no big deal. What's up, girl? You know.
That last scene, that fucking last scene with the nun, like before Valak, before she gets killed, man, fucking like that's showing her teeth and that smile, she looks like fucking the annoying orange.
I remember that fucker. I was kind of like, I love the whole movie, that whole beginning part. I love the Crooked Man shit. Like, that's what I liked about it, is that they had like a lot of gimmicks thrown in there. So like, I was like talking about, you know, when we did what was it, Army of the Dead last week, I was like, man, before they're even ready to like get into what's gonna happen, it's already like 45 minutes in, and I looked at the clock when shit's already ape shit. All kinds of like, that's like this, like I think it was kind of the part where she's by herself and the TV's changing. I'm like, a business has been picking up. There's been all kinds of shit going on for the past 20 minutes. And then in the other film, they're just getting together to like, okay, this is what we're going to do. I'm like, that's way too long to get. And this was like a 2-hour movie, I think, you know. So it was like, no, they paced this one really well. Fuck, I lost my train of thought. But yeah, oh yeah,
comes in hot. Like they start off with going to the house of the. They come and start with the DeFeo killings, and she's walking through the house. She sees herself in the mirror, and it's that fucking scumbag that killed the family.
Fucking scumbag.
Shit like that. That she goes to the basement, sees the fucking nun in the mirror, and sees the spirits of the like the dead kids and shit. I mean, fuck. And then I don't want to be that close to hell again. I mean, that movie comes in hot. Then there's a little break, and you establish yourself with this family over in Britain. I mean, it's action bell to bell.
Yeah, like you said, beginning to end, like that whole like I was like laughing too, because it's like you had mentioned it when we were talking about it, because we always kind of like bullshit a little bit about the film or when you're watching it, and when Janet's by herself and like she's sick and staying home from school, and she's like flipping through the TV. And they had some funny ass shit in there. Like they had like a guy like wearing like a dress. Like if you see that shit on one of the TV shows, and he's like walking through it was like a bunch of random shit. But the TV's like, you know, flipping channels, and then like it turns off, and then you could see Bill like in the back corner in the chair, and like that shit, it was like really fucking good, dude. And that's when she like she's looking for the remote, and then it ends up being by the floor under the TV, and she picks it up, and it's like a quick rough cut, you know, and it's like my house. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I didn't remember that. It was like 11 at night. I was like, ah, dang, man. I can imagine fucking seeing this in theaters again. But was there any good jump scares, dude, that you like, Gabe or Chris?
Definitely. I love the whole painting scene. And I've been to a few horror conventions, even like a couple of Comic Cons and stuff, where these people actually, I remember it specifically, that they were walking around with a frame, like a canvas frame of the nun, and they were walking around as if like they were that jump scare where Lorraine was looking at a painting that Ed Warren was doing, and all of a sudden that she's the what?
I forgot about that. Yeah, that he was doing a painting of the nun, right?
Right, right. And then, well, in the scene where it's Lorraine and just that painting, she's looking around and she's like getting little demonic scares here and there, and she's following a shadow all along the wall. Well, the shadow goes all the way up until it gets behind the painting. The painting wakes up, and the whole canvas is just coming straight at her. And that was pretty badass, and it's pretty funny that a lot of people there was a lot of people like dressing up as that. They walk around with the whole canvas right there, as if they were the the nun.
Yeah, for me, anything in this movie, anything with the fucking nuns was just. I mean, like not even jump, but just that.
What's that song, Chris? That they? I know you had said it like during the chat one of these days. That song that they play. That's oh no. Whatever, and I've heard you sing it a few times.
Hark the Herald Angels Sing.
Yeah, yeah. He does.
Chris I sings, for that.
Yeah, I was all like, oh, I was like, of course Chris would know the fucking song, and yeah, when he had said it, I was like, oh yeah, because that part, you know, again, like it's supposed to be holy and stuff, but it's like freaky to come out in a horror movie just like starts playing on the cassette, you know? I was like, holy shit, or TV. But yeah, this that whole everything with the nun. And I liked it because it was sprinkled in, kind of like the way Annabelle was, but the nun was actually doing shit, not just sitting there, you know, lifeless Annabelle. Get a job, you bum. So, you know, that was this cool. Movie,
This movie, I gotta say, this is one of the few movies that, like, on a budget of $40 million, grossed at the box office $320 million.
That did really, really well. Yeah, yeah. That's why I can't believe it's taking them. Well, it's not extremely long. Like, it was 2016, but 5 years to finally get out a sequel. But of course, last year the COVID. I think it was supposed to come out last year, so it's not too long. And when you think about it, because a lot of shit was delayed. But are y'all excited to see part three after this one? I mean, I was excited when I first fucking heard it was coming out and everything, but then. I didn't watch too much of the trailer, but just kind of, you know, I guess kind of throwing our guesses out now. Like, seeing the trailer, I didn't want to watch all of it, but I watched a little bit of it, and I was just like, it doesn't look like it's going to be anywhere near as good as the first two, and especially since James Wan isn't directing it.
I'm just curious. I want to see it. Like, I want to see what they do. I haven't watched the trailer yet because I don't want to have expectations and then be let down, but I just really want to see what story they tell, where they go with this.
Dave?
Yeah, I went ahead and watched that trailer, and man, it looks really good, though. I am hyped for it. I do want to watch it. So I am looking forward to watching that already.
Yeah. No, I'm the kind of guy that can watch a trailer, like, a day or two later, I forgot it. But so it was like, I kind of just watched it, and I was like, that doesn't look scary, but I was like, I already forgot what I saw. I just remember seeing, like, a guy walk in the road, and, like, that was it. So, I'm always...
It was still an Ed and Lorraine Warren story, so I'm glad that.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. As long as it's, that's the thing, is like, as long as it has them, I'm already interested because it has the, you know, what's his name? Patrick Wilson.
Patrick Wilson.
Yeah, and Vera. Nick Carraway. Yeah, dude. As long as you got Nick Carraway, dude, then we're going to be fine. So, yeah, I'll always give him a chance. I always give Vera a chance. The only thing I don't like is that, I'm not even going to talk about The Curse of La Llorona, but it's the same director, and like a lot of people hated on that movie. I don't think it was great, but I enjoyed it, so we'll see when Chris gets to watch it. Have you seen it, Gabe?
Yep, I did see that movie, and honestly, I didn't even know much about the background on that character or that movie. So, you know, me and the wife were watching it, and there goes the wife, and then she starts telling me, "Oh no, they got it all wrong." What do you mean they got it all wrong? She's all like, "Oh, the true history. Now let me tell you." And she starts going.
Did she raise her eyebrow when she started saying it? Or?
Oh man, she's waving that finger too and all that. I kid you not. She was telling me the whole background story, and pretty much it's like listening to a historian. The full background on
Let me tell you the truth about La Llorona. We used to hang out back in high school. I was in seventh grade. Well, that's not high school, but still.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So she was already telling me, and then I was like, well, I need to know how much more of the truth, because this goes back to Hispanic heritage and all that. So then here I am. I'm all asking my mom, and my mom's like, yeah, that's all true, you know. Mm-hmm. That was a way of keeping them naughty kids, you know, keeping them in line. You know, that's what you would tell them. I never heard that. She's all, I just didn't want to scare you.
We just whipped your ass.
Yeah, pretty much. Go get the belt, you know.
We didn't have to tell you stories, punk.
I mean, that, yeah, I remember that movie, and I just remember being corrected on everything that I was watching about it.
But did you enjoy it, or?
Yeah, definitely. I enjoyed it. I liked the characters and, you know, the actors and actresses. You know, it was a good movie, and it's fun just to go ahead and add to this whole Conjuring universe. It's interesting. So, yeah, that anything that can expand more on something that I'm already interested in is, like, you know, definitely a thumbs up, because I feel like I'm getting more deeper into the universe.
Yeah.
Instead of kind of assuming certain things or assuming other stuff.
So you're not like Jason, to where if there's a universe, you're automatically pissed and shit.
Yeah, well, I kid you not. I don't know what it was, but I think it was just the idea that it seemed like he was just more, there was a lot more hatred for the director than there was for the movie. He's because he explained, he said certain things. He said certain things. He's all like, yeah, he just walks around like he's big shit. Well, good for him. I mean, you know, it's good to have that type of confidence, you know, good for that guy.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to walk around.
Maybe he's cashing out a 401, or maybe he's getting fully vested in a 401k in a few months. I mean, who knows?
Maybe from last week to this week, he went from 91.6% to 95.6%.
Punk ass.
I mean, it's like, yeah, I mean, okay, this is the thing. This is what's so lost on people. It's like, if you're going to be a star, you have to carry yourself like a star. I mean, no one wants to get behind a star that's like walking with their head and like, I guess I'm okay. I'll listen. No, it's like people are attracted to stars because they emit that energy. Now, that doesn't mean be an asshole, but it means show people that you know you're the shit.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I'm you're right. I mean, there is like an attitude that you kind of have to, if you're going to walk and slump around like you're worthless, you know, sack of shit, then people are going to perceive you as a worthless, you know, sack of shit. But I mean, you go ahead and, you know, if you're going to be confident, that, I mean, that's, either way, I don't know how, what that personal interest of that one person affects as far as the whole acting and all the time it's spent. You know, it's not even just him. I mean, there's tons of other, if you look at the credit list for that movie, I mean, everyone pitched in at some point or another. And they're like, you know what, I like how the sound guy did a great job on doing the music and everything on this. Yeah. Or I like how the CGI people, do you see how many people it took just to go ahead and make one building? Good for them for having such talent and going to college and doing that. You know what I mean? There's just like so much involved, and it's not just one person. It's just like there's too many little things to look at, and I guess, I don't know. I guess, again, I'm trying to keep that optimism up for, regardless, even if the movie was something I did not like or I wouldn't like, I still have the appreciation of knowing that there was effort from not just one or two or just like one person that manages the team. I mean, there's like groups upon groups upon groups of people that are working together trying to make something work. And, you know, if you understand, like, these actors, they don't go in just for like 1 hour and say, okay, I said my lines, I'm done. You know, they usually say that they're there from like 3 in the morning, 2 in the morning, all the way up until 1 in the afternoon or 5 in the afternoon. It's like an all day thing. I'm like, man, these actors, I mean, that, you got to give it to them, for them to memorize their lines and to know what they're doing and how to act. And, you know, and then the stunt doubles that come in busting through windows or being set on fire. I mean, man, I kid you not, to, it inspires me to want to make a movie. I'm going to make my own damn movie. Oh, I'm going to do, I don't know when.
Just make a movie. I got one already. We just do the true life story of Ray Clay, dude. That's it. That motherfucker's, and one day he's, you know, killing roaches. The next day he's, you know, at a bodybuilding contest, and the next day he's on a chef show. The next day he's like banging, you know, he's making all this money, but he, you know, he's living in a one bedroom place, you know, banging his landlord that moves, or this neighbor that moved out, but then she's back, and then, you know, cutting down a tree. He's Paul Bunyan. I mean, that motherfucker does it. Oh, kid, I could tell you just a week's worth of stories in like fucking It's just ridiculous.
That,
anyway,
that two-hour biopic of starring freaking Johnny Depp as Ray Clay.
It's like Forrest Gump. It's like the same thing, but it's our good friend. You're not my fucking friend, Joe. Fuck you.
Man, it sounds kind of like a. I don't know why this movie popped into my head. What's that one with David Spade, Joe Dirt?
Joe Dirtay. Yeah, Joe Dirt.
You crying? Yeah.
I laugh every time Chris says that shit. You cry, boy? You cry. I laugh every single fucking time. Def Leppard sucks! Oh, my God. Anyway, let's go and give this shit a rating. Christopher J., dude, how did you like The Conjuring 2 and, you know, just your overall thoughts, man?
Gosh damn, dude. 10 out of 10.
That's it, huh? You're like, that's it.
Perfect run right there.
You liked it that much, huh?
That's a fucking scary movie, dude. I mean, shit, you sitting there watching that at night, you see that shit, fuck, dude, that nun gets in your fucking head, and these poor kids going through all that shit, and their public assistant's mother gonna get mad at them. They turn the lights on and shit, and fucking, hey, man, their dad left and banged the whore down the street and had twins and took the Elvis records.
Billy.
Biscuits, mommy, biscuits.
Don't eat too many biscuits. You're gonna wake up dusty. The fucking ghost gonna get you in the middle of the night. All right. And then you see, and then it was like, I forgot, like, right, he's like pouring water. He looks outside. The swing's all swinging by itself in the middle of the night. That's some scary shit. Gabe, what you think about this?
Well, like I said, I enjoy this whole Conjuring universe. I enjoy the characters. Patrick Wilson is just a badass. You know, just, and it is a good movie. I do watch it, probably not as often, but I do watch it. Like, if I end up watching the first one, it just goes ahead and autoplays and jumps to the second one. So, I won't turn it off. I'll go ahead and watch the whole thing through. It's a good movie. Definitely a strong 8 right there.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's something I have to watch. I won't just go and start off on part two. It's one of those things where, like, you know, I'm curious about the Annabelle movie, so I start watching that. Before you know it, I'm leading up to Conjuring, and then I'm watching part two to Conjuring. So, it's one of those things. It's like a good lead up for me to just, like, no, I can't just stop at this one. I have to jump to the next one, too. So,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to part three. I'm giving this thing a strong 8, and it's a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of like in between an 8 and an 8.5. Like, I reserve my 9s and 10s for, like, the ones I can watch, like, every single, like, almost every day, shit like that. This one's a really good movie. There's, like, nothing wrong with it or anything. Well, I can't say that. The one thing I do have a problem with, just real quick, is, like, the whole ending thing. Like, it's just so overly dramatic, and I kind of, like, giggled. What's his name? The dude, Patrick Wilson. Ed. She's like, Ed! He's like, I have to do this, honey. You know, like, and then she's like, nah! It's all, like, just over the top, and I was just kind of, like, laughing. I'm like, it's just drama for the sake of drama, and it's like, the whole movie was fast-paced and good, but then, like, that ending, you're like, oh, God, it's gonna be, you know, it just seemed, like, super predictable when all that crap was happening, and I just didn't like that whole overly dramatic, and how, like, they're completely confused the whole movie, which I like, but all of a sudden she's like, oh, it must have been this, and she must have been blocking my power, and then it's just, like, all just too quick, just, like, you know, just way too quick, you know, and I was like, what the fuck, man, like, you know, like, at least have some slow build-up on what's going on, like, I don't know, I think, you know, it just seemed, like, way too quick, so that part, it kind of felt like, well, it's a little, the whole, like, 90% of the movie's great, it is fucking scary, I love it, right, and then there's that last, when they're leaving, and then they play the movie, when the film, like, or the audio falls out, and, like, it crosses each other, and she's like, all of a sudden, well, let me crisscross it and play it backward. Like, who the fuck's gonna do that shit on a train or whatever they're on? You know, it just seemed kind of ridiculous. But I still love the fucking movie. That's the only kind of part I have, so a problem I have with it. But, yeah, I give it, like, an 8 out of 10. I love it. Can watch it a few times out of the year, no big deal, like, 3 times, and I will, like, this one and part one, it is a toss-up for me. Like, it just depends on what you're in the mood for. Like, because the first one, The witch, yeah, she's technically a lot more. You don't want to fuck with that witch, but the way they did Bill Wilkins in this was like a little bit more scary. He had like a lot more to do with the being in the actual movie than Bathsheba did in the first one. But badass fucking movie. Yeah, I can't wait till part three comes out. I've been waiting for years. I might as well, you know, hype myself up tomorrow. It's not going to be real till I get up for work and I'm like, fuck, I want to watch this movie. I got to go to work. And then I'm like, oh, I got to wait till me and the dudes are hanging out to watch it. But any other...
Can I say one thing? I can't wait for part three tomorrow. That's going to be fucking badass. But the other thing, too, is one thing I love about this Conjuring series is that in this modern world that we live in, this is a popular culture piece that, in a way, praises, celebrates, you know, applauds Catholicism because it's a force for good in these films.
Well, so that's why you're on the podcast to break shit down for us like that, Chris.
So,
Gabe, you got anything else to say before we close this thing out? And you start, you give a weak ass latest at the end. I started laughing at that shit last week.
Yeah. That shit was just sad. I was thinking about it too after we were all off the air and everything, and I started going about my business, you know, doing my stuff, and then I started thinking, I was like, damn, that was sad. What the hell was I thinking? I was like, man, it just was not good. So then later on, I kid you not.
He's all practicing by himself.
I was talking to my boss, and we were chit-chatting, and later, goodbye. See you next time. Goodbye. Dave, what the hell are you doing? I'm doing some work, boss. What's going on with you? I don't know. I just heard you yelling stuff. Not me. You heard something.
You're all leaving. Yeah.
Driving on the way home. Goodbye. Adios. Throwing some Spanish in there.
Yeah. Okay, that's bad. But you know, it would have been worse if you said toodaloo.
Toodaloo. Well, that's the thing. You could say whatever you want. Like, I swear, like, the way we always end a podcast is like, even before I did anything with Chris, is like, I always say, you know, all right, you guys, I see you on the next one. Peace. Well, he started really amplifying the peace. Like, he would just do it naturally with me. And then he started, like, always throwing in, you got to be shitting me, man. That mother's strong. And I thought we were only going to be doing that shit, like, for the Phantasm. And, like, I swear, like, the past 10 podcasts, he's done it. And every time I forget, and he starts saying it, I start laughing at myself.
I don't know. With Chris doing that, that's even cool, man. It's just...
That whole line
was just a badass on its own.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was funny because I always thought that was like, I love Phantasm. It's like my top three favorite horror movies. And like, it's not like, oh, perfect. It's just I love the whole feel of it. And then when he was all like, yeah, I popped for that part when he's all like, you know, like, man, you got to be shitting me, man. That mother's strong. And then he kind of like amplified the fucking strong all kind of deal. So everyone brings their own little gimmick. So if you want to, whatever you want to say, dude, you fucking say it. You fucking say it. Right, Chris?
You fucking say it, motherfucker.
Yeah. So, anyways, episode 51 next week. Y'all know 52. It's going to be The Conjuring 3, and I hope you guys enjoyed it, and we'll see you on the next one.
Man, you got to be shitting me. That mother's strong.
Peace.
Goodbye.
Okay, Arnold.
I love it.